This is a replay of the Wednesday night, January 11th, WGN show. We started around 10:30 after sports. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. And I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. And they've got the neatest app where your VoIP phone can take text messages, too. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
I'm Raleigh James. It's the Better Late Than Never Network, and I'll tell you what, I had no idea there was a sports interruption, and that's my fault, because sure enough, WGN didn't notify me. I just somehow spaced it. I know there is one tomorrow night, and tomorrow night will be delayed about an hour, but as for tonight, well, here we are now. That's right, attendance might be taken, and hopefully tonight, in fact, I'll probably stop whatever I'm doing, actually, to talk about it, and that is, I promise Karen and several others, the history of the Manhattans, the early history, not the Columbia stuff, but the early stuff, particularly the carnival years. So we are going to get to that tonight, no matter what. All right, so with that in mind, of course, your calls are paramount as well. 888-876-5593. That would be 8888. Raleigh, we're going to get to Rita in Harwood Heights in a moment, and Mark in Downers Grove, who hung on yesterday for well over an hour. And I understand he's moving, so we'll hear all about that. But in the meantime, I was just seeing something Arizona-based. You know, Arizona is hosting the Super Bowl this year. And the city of Phoenix has issued, an unconstitutional mandate. So already the Goldwater Institute is suing them. And you'll love this. It's not, you know, in many ways, this is not political. It's economic. And you'll see what I mean. No resident or business in the clean zone, which is most of downtown Phoenix and everything west heading toward where the Super Bowl will be played, can put up any temporary signs, including flags, banners, posters, flyers, or even window paintings, without the approval of the NFL and the Arizona Super Bowl host committee. Now, this is not without the approval of the city. This is without the approval of the NFL. What kind of signs are they expecting? Well, hundreds of businesses, thousands of residents are all in this zone, banned from communicating with the public on their own property without permission from two private companies. Yeah, that's pretty unprecedented, but we'll see where that goes. So I was just noticing that. But, you know, all bets are off years ago when the Supreme Court said that eminent domain could be used for business purposes. So who knows what will happen with this one. But I hadn't seen that until, I'd say, about 10 minutes ago when I looked at this, and I thought, oh, man, this is going to be interesting. All right, so with that in mind, we'll talk to Rita in Harwood Heights. Welcome to WGN Radio. What's up, Rita?
Oh, Raleigh, I know you've got information for me. I'm happy. I listen to you on this little Crane Skywave radio.
Uh-huh.
And I probably have had it maybe for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
I don't know where the box is. And it only came, it didn't have anything else in there except maybe some directions or something. And I've lost that. But I'm having trouble with this little radio. And I wanted to be able to contact the company.
Yes.
Or get another one or something, because this, I depend on this little radio.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I don't have a computer or anything.
Have you called them yet?
No, I don't have any way to call them.
Do you have a phone number? I'll give it to you.
No.
Okay, you ready?
Okay.
Ready to write?
Yes.
800,
yes.
That's 800-522-8863. And that's 522-TUNE. This is 7 days a week. I don't know if it's 24 hours a day because they don't outsource customer service. It's really them. And
okay, can you repeat? It's 800-522.
Yeah, 522. So 522-8863.
63. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And so call them. And if you have any problem, you call me back. But I don't think you will be having any problem because their customer service is just tremendous. And whatever it is, all based in the United States. That's why I say I don't know if it's 24 hours a day because you're not calling India. You're calling California. And they will help. I've never known them not to.
Okay. Oh, so, that's so great, because I really depend on this little radio.
So which
I don't have a computer or anything, and this and my little flip phone are the only things that I have.
Well, absolutely. So which one do you have? You've got the SkyWave?
Yeah, it's called Sea Crane SkyWave.
Right, exactly. And right now, I'm looking at a couple things. They even have some orphans here. Yeah, they still have SkyWaves. It's probably not the exact same model that you have from 10 years ago, but I guarantee you they will know the answer to your questions.
Okay. Okay.
And, you know, they're great. And, you know, as far as manuals and stuff, I don't know if there is one, but if there is, I'm sure they would be happy to print it and mail it to you.
Okay, good. Thank you so much,
sure.
Raleigh.
No problem.
You're so knowledgeable about so many things.
No problem at all. Well, you know, I stand behind the Sea Crane Company because I'm advertising their products, and I refuse to advertise anything I don't believe in. So bottom line is, if they don't come through for you, you call me up, and I'll be the 1,000-pound gorilla to call them. But it's never happened yet. They've always come through.
Okay.
So let me
know.
Thanks
a lot.
All right. My pleasure. Thanks for calling. All right.
Have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
So, yeah, I know. When your favorite radio is just not performing anymore, it's a crisis, to say the least. And I understand that in four-part harmony. 888-876-5593. Mark in Downers Grove is next. I feel so bad because of how long he waited last night. So you'll hear from him in moments on WGN Radio.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. How
do you say I'm sorry?
I'm sorry.
How do you say I'm sorry? When you've hurt,
when you've hurt
the one you love.
How
do you say forgive me? Say forgive me. How do you say forgive me when you've hurt,
when you've hurt
the one
you love?
Do you send a bouquet of flowers, or do you call her on the phone?
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and those are the Manhattans. No, not the Manhattans we know, of course. See, this is one of the problems with the Manhattans. There were a lot of other groups with the same name. These Manhattans were Freddie Johnson's group, 1958, on Warner Brothers, so not ours, and predated them, actually, by a few years, but figured I'd play it nonetheless. We'll play a couple other Manhattans who aren't the Manhattans, and then, of course, we'll also be playing the Manhattans who are the Manhattans. If that's not confusing, give me time. Mark in Downers Grove, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, I want to tell Rita that I've talked with six people at Sea Crane, and every one of them has been knowledgeable, and they are also very friendly. In fact, I took a little chance. I won't tell you who the lady is, but I said to her, hey, you know, do you ever make it out Chicago way? Because I think you'd be a neat person to meet. And she said, no, I actually have never traveled there, but I'll tell you what, if you ever get to Fortuna, California, feel free to come in and visit us.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll give you the tour. I've been there.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, they are all personable, and I admit I'm biased, but I would recommend that Rita get a brand new SkyWave 2 radio and also the adapter and two rechargeable batteries, and she'll be ready to go.
There you are. All right. So
and then the second item is that James from the South Side mentioned that story. I think I have details that he's looking for. The boy decided to settle an argument with his teacher by shooting her, and he went into his mother's purse and got the gun. Now, you got to figure any boy who would have the chutzpah to shoot his teacher would have no compunction about violating his mother's privacy to go into her purse.
But now here's the thing. I'd like to know more about when this happened, because you see, I'm a very big believer in the Second Amendment, and I think everybody has every right to own the weapon of their choice. I firmly believe that. But with that right comes strong responsibility. And one of the things is, if you have kids in the house, you have to make sure that those weapons are not accessible, period. And so where was her purse? And, you know, that to me is a problem. And, you know, when people do this, it sort of like ruins the right for everybody else, because it's a flaming example of this not being okay. Now, John and I were talking about it. He said, well, I'm not so sure. I said, I'd haul that mother out in a heartbeat. Okay, in her purse, but hey, what six-year-old doesn't know how to go to mommy's purse? Usually it's for gumdrops or something, but even so... You know, so I want it. That's what I want to know. And of course, there's going to be a lot of decisions. And I'm not saying CPS should come and get the kid or anything like that. But I am saying there really needs to be accountability here.
Well, this whole story creeps me out, because imagine this is a 6-year-old. I mean, how early can you lose your innocence?
Well, not only that, the system is completely not designed to handle this. The only thing that they can do is hand this child over to relatives or CPS or something of that nature, because they cannot put them in juvie lockup, not at 6.
Yeah, so, and that probably means he's going to feel rewarded for his behavior.
Well, you know, it's hard to say, but there's a lot more to this story, and that's why when James and I were talking about it last night, I would like to know what that is.
I would too.
Yeah, a mother normally, the instincts are do anything to protect your children, and I don't care if that's a human being or a bear. That's sort of the maternal instinct. And so the question is, where was her mind if the gun was simply in her purse? Now, this would be different if she had it in her night table and she was sound asleep and it was 2 a.m. and she's sleeping there with the gun because she's afraid somebody's going to come in and get her or something. Now, you know, those kind of scenarios I can almost see. But what? In her purse on the dining room table? Where was this purse? And where was mom?
No.
Didn't mom notice it was missing?
That's another piece of the story we need. But that story just makes me sick.
Well, of course it does. Of course it does.
Now, I have an apartment ready, and I'll be in there in late January or early February. I chose Aurora because it has a more extensive bus system, and they even gave me a choice of 3 apartments. The one on the second floor is a little smaller, and the ones left were on the 5th and 7th floor, and both would be good for radio reception, but the one on the 5th floor faces the front of the building, which gets sunlight. The one on the 7th floor faces the back. So I said, I want the one on the 5th floor. I want the sunlight.
Sure, the sunlight. Now, what direction is this facing?
I believe it's facing south.
Okay. All right.
But it may be that it's facing east or west, but it's facing the sun. And the 5th floor, the 7th floor isn't going to be much better for radio reception than the 5th floor.
No, the nice thing about the south, when you say it's facing the sun, it's not directly facing the sun, because, of course, the sun is going from east to west. But if it's, you know, like if it's facing east toward Naperville or something, man, those mornings are going to be bright. And if it's facing west, okay, come summer, those afternoons are going to be hot. So south would be great.
I think it is, as I remember, it's facing south. And then that means that even in the summer, I won't boil to death. But yeah. It has a built-in window air conditioner. It comes with an oven and a refrigerator. So one of the first things I'm going to get is a MyPillow mattress topper.
Oh, man. All right. Well, good. Living large. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm feeling pretty pepped up right now. But I wish Rita good luck. And, I was going to say that the Sea Crane customer service is open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific time.
No, that's good to know. So that's 2 hours difference. And good to know.
Yeah, and of all the companies I deal with, they are one of the two that really feel like family.
Yeah, they're great. They're just terrific. So I got to ask about Aurora, of course. You know, it's partially in four counties. So are you going to be in DuPage, Kane, Kendall, or Will?
No, Kane.
Okay. All right. Good deal.
I will be on the west side of Aurora, and the apartment building has a bus stop right in front, and it has a Jewel right across from it. That's
all
the
right.
Grocery store.
Yes, of course. Well, good deal.
So
all
this
right.
will be good.
Excellent.
Just got to scurry and get the documents together.
Yeah, well, good luck on the move.
They're even going to let me move in without having my birth certificate right away.
Well, that's good. So,
yeah, it is.
Yeah. All right.
So I got to do some legwork.
And you will. And you will.
Yes, I will.
All right. Good deal. Well, congratulations.
Okay.
Can't wait to hear about it.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Okay,
All right,
I will go back to being Mark from Aurora.
That's right. It'll be Mark from Aurora, not far from the Phillips Park Zoo. All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. So, I know there's a zoo there. There's other things. There's a haunted house, but I think I'm almost exhausting my knowledge of Aurora. 888-876-5593. And Eduardo is in Midway. What's happening tonight, Eduardo?
Yeah, Riley, I was going to talk about, and this might be a place that I'm sure Trucker Rich passed by, but Laredo, Texas.
Oh, I've been there many, many, many times, yes, and it's so...
Yeah, well,
have
you did
been,
an article
have you
on
been
the
there?
Sunday Trib.
Yeah, have you been there, by the way?
Because of the supply chain problems.
Okay.
So now they want to, build more warehouses there. So there's like 800 million products that pass through every day, and they're building a 360 million new bridge between Mexico and Laredo.
Yep, across the Rio Grande.
Yeah, so they don't want to depend on, China or, overseas traffic to get that stuff in. They want to have it as close as possible. So, Mexico and then into through Texas, and as far as wherever they got to go, they have just use an example, brake pads going up to some trucking firms in South Dakota. So they want to be closer to the states than going, depending overseas.
Well, it's interesting when you say that because, of course, the Mexican port is controlled, the big one is controlled by the Chinese government. But Laredo is interesting. Have you been there?
No, I made it to El Paso, but no, not Laredo. No.
Laredo is like nothing else because you really think that you've somehow already crossed the border. I mean, even the signs are in Spanish, and the little downtown looks like I must have gone to Nuevo Laredo without realizing it. I mean, it is America, but you'd never believe it. There's nothing like Laredo anywhere. And the first time I went there, it was like I was sure that I had accidentally crossed somehow over to Nuevo Laredo, and like nope, you're on the right side of the Rio Grande.
Yeah,
it the downtown and all very much like that. It is the least American looking city in America. So it's not big. It's not very big. They do have an airport and all that, but it's a real shock the first time.
Well, speaking of being aware, just another thing here, because I know you're coming up on the news here.
Yes.
The something called some serious, it's some special, kind of like the TSA special line where you go through, kind of like express.
Yes, hang on a minute. We will talk about this after the news. Don't go away. Stay right where you are. And that's exactly where we'll pick it up. And we'll have 2 hours, and I promise the Manhattans tonight, no matter what, coming up on WGN Radio.
Oh, oh, oh. Why should I cry?
I'm Raleigh James, and we'll be back with Eduardo in moments. And we got James and Henry and Fran, and we'll talk to all of you as well, hopefully, if you'll call. And we will get to the Manhattans. In fact, you're hearing the Manhattans, not those Manhattans. Yeah, once again, that's right. It's the Manhattans, but not the ones we know and love. This is Donald Larry Calloway's Manhattans, 1961 on Big Mac. They spelled it ENS, basically. So the rest of them spelled it just like Manhattan should be spelled, and unfortunately it led to some confusion. But fortunately, our Manhattans, the ones we know and love from Carnival and later, were the ones who survived. I don't know whatever happened to Donald or Larry Calloway, but I kind of liked Why Should I Cry. So 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH. And Eduardo is in Midway again, and we were talking about Laredo, and we've moved on. So what are we talking about?
Yeah, just briefly, so you can get to the other callers here. The Sentry, it's S-E-N-T-R-I. So there were some people, came in Daily Mail, where they were using that because it's exclusively for people who are kind of like pre-check, low-risk travelers.
Mm-hmm.
Going back from Mexico to U.S.,
mm-hmm.
and they found some people using that, and they were fined $5,000, and they even impounded a car.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Sentry, it's $122 a year, and it's the most expensive, but it is more than expedited land crossings. It automatically
right.
gets you through the pre-checks, and you can go through the global entry kiosks. But in terms of people abusing it, were they stealing the cards? What were they doing?
No, the people they interviewed says, oh, well, we just didn't know that. This was the Sentry lane. That's what they claimed.
Oh, okay. So in other words, they weren't faking the Sentry pass. They just got in the wrong lane.
Right.
Well.
Right. That's what they claimed. A couple of ladies they interviewed on Daily Mail. Yeah.
Well, in some cases, I can believe it because the border crossings usually are a cluster. But Sentry's pretty well marked. And if you're crossing routinely, $122 is not a lot of money. The problem is it's pretty invasive in what they want to know about you.
Okay.
You know, so you go through a biographical background check. And, of course, that's the usual law stuff. But more than that, you have to do the fingerprint stuff. And I don't know if they keep that on file or not. And then you go do the personal interview. So it's pretty invasive. But if they don't keep the fingerprints
sure.
and all that, it might be worth doing if you are a permanent resident and you're crossing regularly. You know, for the guy who's just going down once every couple of months, it's probably not worth it, but for anybody
right.
else, it will reduce your wait time, no doubt about that, but it's up to you if you want to provide the information. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'll need to check out Laredo one of these days.
Oh, you should. You should. You will see what I mean. You will think, you say, this is America?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing quite like it downtown.
Yeah,
so,
I'm looking at the photo of the article I saw on this trip, and they're mm-hmm. building this bridge. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
It'd be nice.
Well,
to look around.
Right. The Rio Grande's interesting because there are places where literally you can just walk across, and there are other places where you're going to drown. So it depends where the crossing is to how bad that bridge is needed.
Right. Okay. So the travel show, I'll be at Saturday or Sunday, and they got the boat show this weekend. So everybody get out there and with the family and have fun.
Yeah. Check out that boat show. That's always fun.
Right. Okay.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. So, yeah, I love those kind of things. And, of course, they're commercial ventures. But the nice thing about that is usually the admittance charges aren't high. And you get to see a lot of stuff. So, 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh. And Henry in North Carolina wants to weigh in on the Houston area shooting. All right. Tell me about Houston.
Hey, Raleigh. I hope you're doing well.
Can't complain. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. You know, I used to live in Jersey, and I was always a firm believer in the Second Amendment. And in Jersey, it was almost impossible to have a handgun.
Yes, it is.
And I'm in North Carolina, where it's you go to a class, you know, for a day, and then you can have a concealed carry. And I wanted one, and I had to learn how to carry it. In terms of, I wasn't confident right away, you know, walking amongst crowds concealed. And then I read this story, and I often wondered about these good guys with a gun, bad, taking care of a bad guy with a gun. I always thought, how would I react if I'm carrying and something in public like that is breaks out, and you could have the opportunity to stop a bad person with a gun. And I heard this Texas story. Did you hear about it?
Are you talking about the one in the Tacarita in Southwest Houston?
Yes,
okay.
That one.
Yeah.
And a guy comes in with a gun, points it at everybody, and just to tell a little bit, points the gun at everybody and watches everybody's wallet, and he walks around the store, and people throw their money out on the floor and their wallets and stuff. And as he goes past this one guy, he has a gun. He's carrying a gun. He shoots him, and stops that robbery, shot him 8 times, stops that robbery, tells everybody to get their money back, and picks up the gun. And it was a plastic gun, make-believe gun, but the threat was real.
Mm-hmm.
Had a right to react to it, I guess, by Texas standards. He would have it by North Carolina standards. But the one thing in question is the guy falls dead on the floor. You have 8 shots. And he picks up the plastic gun, throws it against the wall, and then shoots the dead guy again. And they want the grand jury wants to take a look at it because of that.
Well, I'll tell you, in Texas, Texas is really interesting because, of course, when you go for your concealed carry permit in Texas, you do the same thing. You go through the class. But one of the things you're told is if you use this weapon, you will be indicted. And that doesn't mean that you're going to be charged and all that. But they let you know that you shoot somebody, there will be a lot of answers that they're going to want. So they warn you thoroughly about that. Because the last thing they want is, you know, people becoming vigilantes, obviously. So it's not surprising that they're going to look hard at that. And of course, what you say in terms of, you know, after he's dead and you're shooting him again, that's not in the guy's best interest, to say the least. That's going to be going to be looked at. But as well it should be. Now you mentioned something about how you weren't comfortable at first, and this is sort of one of my pet peeves. Again, I feel everybody should have the absolute right, but with that responsibility, hopefully you've got enough range time where you are so comfortable with that weapon that it's almost second nature to you. Now, hopefully you'd never use it, but the last thing you want is someone carrying a gun who's unsure of his weapon and his ability.
Yeah, always been around guns, and I just felt, you know, in New Jersey, we weren't allowed to have a concealed carry unless you had a very special reason. And
right.
I didn't have any. I'm very familiar with handguns and shooting them. I shoot them, stay fresh on it all the time, you know. And but concealed carry and in a situation like that, I just don't know how I'd react. And I guess nobody knows unless it really happens to you. But I'm very cautious about, you know, it took me a little while to get used to it. I actually got stopped by the cops. And I told the cop in a routine check, and I was carrying the gun for the maybe second, third time, and local police. And they just said, we're just checking. They had a roadblock up. We're just checking. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, I'm from Jersey, and this is the first time I'm being pulled over carrying a concealed carry handgun, which I have a license for. And, you know, I had my hands on the wheel.
Right.
And he said, And I said, I just want to let you know, this is the first time. So he said, don't even worry about it.
Exactly.
Don't even worry about it.
I got a lot more comfortable
after that.
If you read any of John Lott's works, and he's the guy who first wrote More Guns, Less Crime, and he was at the University of Chicago, actually, and he was not necessarily in favor of gun rights, and still he looked at the statistics, and he said, oh my God, every time we're seeing safer communities where we have more people carrying. And so there's a ton of research that shows that, and I'm grateful for it. And I think that most gun owners and those with CCWs and all, are absolutely responsible and good guardians of society, but it's important that everybody hold everyone accountable to that as well. So you got the right, but you have the responsibility as far as I'm concerned. So yeah.
I agree. Responsibility of this young child, 6 years old.
Oh, well,
there's no excuse for having access.
No, that's the mother. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'd love to know where that purse was. And I'm glad that they will not let this slide. Now, again, I'm not saying she should lose the child or custody or all that, but there should be real investigation into how the hell this happened.
If nothing, it's going to pique a lot of people interest who have guns around to maybe save somebody else from having
I would sure hope so. Again, fine. You've got the weapon. You've got the responsibility for the weapon, too. And it's not that difficult to have gun safes, and it's not that expensive. You know,
yeah, you're right, Rob.
Certainly something that'll defeat a six-year-old. You know, I know you go out and buy the gun safes, and let's face it, if someone comes to rob your house, they're not that hard to get into if you got a good burglar. But in terms of, you know, the kids and the neighborhood kids, yeah, they'll stop them. So invest in that at least, I think. So, yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Okay, well, okay. I just wanted to get your opinion on that. It piqued my interest.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be very interesting. They will, of course, bring it to a grand jury. They always do. It's the form in Texas. That doesn't mean that anybody's going to get arrested, but it's going to be investigated. And it's good that people know that there. So,
For sure.
It's self-defense, but then the shot afterwards, well, we'll find out about that.
That's a little bit hard to understand.
We'll see where that falls. I'm sure KPRC TV2 will keep us informed. All right. Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate it, Henry.
Always a pleasure, Raleigh.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, goodbye. So, and everybody else, of course, in Houston Television will keep us informed. So the other thing, of course, is if for whatever reason you are not able to handle a weapon, for God's sakes, don't have one. You know, like my vision prevents it. I can't do it. And in fact, we've got something really neat here. It's a simulator, and it's at one of the local gun locations, and it is so real. And the people, and it's used, by the way, for police training and all that. So it's not just, but the general public can book, say, half hour in the simulator. And, they because they're one of my sponsors, they said, you know, how would you like to come in? you don't want me to come in. But I'll send John. And he loved it, you know. But I figure, you know, it's sort of like if you can't see the target, probably better that you don't try to shoot it. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And Fran is in Austin. Welcome back to WGN Radio, Fran.
Hey, Raleigh, so I gather you wouldn't recommend I get a gun.
I know. We're both exempt from that, you know. I mean, it goes without saying. And, I laugh about that, but there are so many people, sadly, who think that they are entitled to carry a gun when they're not putting the time in at the range and they're not doing the responsible thing. And those people, no, they should be prevented from having the weapons.
No. What bothers me, though, is kind of the, I remember a while back there was a kid, I think, in early teens or preteen, something like that, that shot up a bunch of people, and they knew that the kid had problems, and it turned out that the father gave the kid the gun.
Uh-huh.
And the mother was on Facebook saying, you know, oh, well, whatever the kid's name is out playing with his Christmas present.
No, no.
You know, kind of like it was just a new bicycle or go-kart or something.
No.
And I just think, especially, the kid's got problems.
Yeah, highly irresponsible.
But then,
highly irresponsible, yeah. of course. And yeah. if anything happened, those parents would have absolutely been liable.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And should. It's just like the PSAs we hear. I think they're run on WGN. It could be on our local stations, but I think it's on GN, about how don't give alcohol in your home to minors. And it's like, well, that's kind of a no-brainer, but I think it's a swell idea that now all these parents who are trying to be too hip for the room and giving their 16-year-olds booze, they'll hang for it if anything happens with those kids.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my mom did it. You know, well, thinking back on
yeah,
it, I think, well,
not okay.
The smartest thing to do.
It's, you know, but the liability is squarely there, and I think people don't really think about that. You know, for a while, even weddings were doing things like they wouldn't serve alcohol to guests because, of course, if somebody left the wedding party and went and got drunk, they could actually sue. And, you know, I don't know how much of that's going on anymore, but I certainly know of some radio station owners who got hit with literally million-dollar judgments because of their, like, two-for-Tuesdays at the, you know, in beer and stuff like that. So the liability is there.
Oh, and it's so easy to get. I mean, I remember getting alcohol when I always looked a little older than I was. And now that's, you know, like, okay, I want to look younger.
Well, right. You know? Yeah, I hate that. I go in somewhere and they automatically give me the senior discounts. Like, wait a minute.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But, you know, at that time, I was happy to look older because, you know, I could go and get alcohol. And it was just, they hardly ever even carded me.
Right. No, of course not. But you're seeing it more now because of liability.
Yep.
And, you know, again, you got all the rights in the world, but it comes with a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. But the thing I don't understand is the casual kind of attitude that these parents or, you know, and what is it to put it into the kid's mind that the way to show the teacher that he was right is to shoot?
Well, right. The as far as that 6-year-old, it boggles the mind because we can't even comprehend what that 6-year-old is thinking. And the other thing, of course, is whatever he's thinking, that 6-year-old clearly had been demonstrating some behavioral problems before this. It doesn't come from out of nowhere. So there are so
right.
many aspects to this. And I'd be curious about parents of other kids who knew this kid. Did they see, not obviously they didn't see that the kid was going to shoot the teacher, but did they see behavioral problems? Because very often that manifests where you find 7 or 8 people, oh yeah, we've seen them, we know. You know, so I'd be
curious.
Oh
yeah, well the kid in that one story that I was talking about, I think had indicated in something that he wrote or something that he needed help.
Well, isn't that...
I think I remember
isn't
that.
Isn't that interesting? And he didn't get it. Well, hopefully by now he has.
He didn't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just a shame that people have this, you know... the thing that really got me about that was the way the parents were acting like, oh, Johnny's outside playing with his new Christmas toy.
Right.
You know, like it's a new bike or something, and it's you know, and what is this with the gun being in her purse? I mean, I was not allowed to go into my mother's purse. It was
right, but
I didn't do it,
of course. But many kids would. So the question, you know, even if they were quote unquote not allowed,
you know?
Right? Of course. So bottom line is absolutely not. You've ended the half hour, Fran. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye.
All right, so 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and well, we have some more Manhattans that aren't the Manhattans. These Manhattans were Riley Mack's group on Avante in 1964, Later for You. And that's interesting because our Manhattans, the Manhattans that we're going to talk about now for a while, they were actually recording in 1964. But to go back a bit, the story of the Manhattans, a story of five singers who were going to two high schools in Jersey City in the 50s. And George Smith and Richard Taylor went to Snyder, and Blue Lovett and Kenny Kelly and Ed Bliven, Sonny, went to Lincoln. And the five of them got together, and it's interesting that initially Blue was singing beforehand and actually had released a record. All right, so that was kind of interesting. The Dulcets. Now, the part of the Dulcets that is fascinating is by the time they got to records, there was a mistake on the label, and it said it was the Dorsets. And actually, the lead singer on this is Smitty. Yeah. And who was, of course, George Smitty Smith, who died in 1970, the original lead of the Manhattans, and so great he was. But if you were wondering, going back to the Dorsets or the Dulcets, they actually got a label contract with a label you've never heard of, Asnes, A-S-N-E-S, yes, the big Asnes label, in 1961. And they decided, and you'll hear exactly what I mean, that their goal was to sound like the Coasters, perhaps. Well, with a title like Pork Chops, what would you expect?
I like my biscuits fluffy, child, with rice on the side, yeah. But when it comes to good loving, baby, don't forget to buy me some pork chops, chops, yeah.
Grows on you after a while. That is the Dulcets, who on the label says were the Dorsets. And if you know something about Asnes Records, I'd like to know it, because I know nothing other than later, about 4 years later in 1965, it was re-released on Sue in Great Britain. So I'm not sure. But as far as the Dulcets, who were actually not the Dorsets, they were the Dulcets, even though the label, you know, claimed other words. It was Smitty, and it was Blue, and it was Sonny. And so a couple other members as well who later didn't go on. But Blue admitted, yeah, the Coasters and the Olympics. And they did like the Olympics. So that was Pork Chops. And with that in mind, that's the really, I guess, the first recorded beginning of what would become the Manhattans. And the Manhattans, as I say, a Jersey City group, not named for the Manhattan skyline, as a lot of people thought, because, of course, you know, from Jersey City looking over there, you'd see that. But Blue explained, no, it was the alcoholic drink. Everybody thought it was from the skyline or the borough of New York, so we grabbed onto it, but we collectively came up with the Manhattans thinking about the drink. And indeed, the drink had its own history. And yeah, we could go into that, but there's probably not enough time. But so it was that George Smith and Richard Taylor and Kenny Kelly and of course Sonny got together, and that was what would become the Manhattans after the Dorsets. And by luck, they would meet Joe Evans. And Joe Evans was an interesting character. He was a musician on every sense of the word. He was recording in the 30s and playing with everybody from Jay McShann and Charlie Parker, Louis Armstrong, Cab Calloway. You know, this is all big, big stuff. And I believe he wrote about it in a book, Follow Your Heart, named after the Manhattan's record of same name. He went on, and by the way, he made it till 2014, and he was 97 years old. He died in Richmond, but ultimately he went on in the world of A&R, and he got involved with Motown. And interestingly, in that he actually took the Manhattans to Motown, and they passed, but I digress some. But along the way, Joe realized that he really needed his own label, and so the idea of Carnival, originally, I guess, CJ, I didn't really want to mention CJ, but and that was he and Clarence Johnson got together with a label that had a lot of great acts and absolutely no hits whatsoever. And then he went to Motown after that and was doing A&R stuff. And from there, it became Carnival. And he had a partner at first, Paul Williams, not the musician you'd know, but a saxophonist who was an artist in his own right from the 40s. And so it was that with Carnival, the first thing they did was the Trentines. And we played that. Your Yeah Yeah Is Gone. And Flipside is actually better. And then the second record was forgettable. But the third was a Barbara Brown record. And Barbara Brown did some great stuff all the way around. But for the Manhattans, the best thing she ever did was she introduced them to Joe Evans. And how exactly that came about is dependent upon who you ask. And so if Blue recalled it as this was when Joe was playing in the backup band at the Apollo, was that the Manhattans had been on stage at the Apollo and they so impressed Joe that he, asked for a meeting. And Joe said, no, it was Barbara Brown. She gave them my phone number and they called me. And there are many, many stories. But the bottom line was at the time that Joe Evans had Carnival and was about to sign the Manhattans, he was still under contract to Motown for a number of things, and that's why he went to Berry Gordy. And Barry, you know, he liked it, but he said, hey, no, it's Mickey Stevenson's call, and you got to talk with him. And Mickey Stevenson was interested, but he wanted to take the project over. He wanted to just say, okay, we'll get you like a referral fee. And Joe said, hell, you will. And so he put him on Carnival, and that's how they wound up on Carnival. And it was interesting that all of their sessions had some of New York's finest, you know, Bernard Purdy, Bertie Purdy on guns, and Jimmy Tyrell on bass, and Robert Banks on piano. So they had a number of people, others as well. And so it was that the Manhattan's recording career was born. And the first song they did was a local hit. Yeah, when I say local, like the Jersey station played it, right, for the very first time in 1964, and it did absolutely nothing. But then after that, the second record was interesting because the third was the breakout, and we'll get to that. But the second record was interesting. And Call Somebody Please was written by Blue. That was the B-side. And the A-side was There Goes a Fool. And you'll hear it coming up on WGN Radio.
There goes a fool. There goes.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is the Manhattans on Carnival, their second record, There Goes a Fool. We usually don't give it enough play because the flip side is Call Somebody Please, and that's what I usually play. But, oh, the solo here? That's Joe Evans, who owns Carnival Records, or owned, no longer with us, of course. But that's Joe's contribution. Of course, he produced all the stuff, too. The rehearsal halls were all in Jersey City, but most of the stuff was recorded in Manhattan at Talent Masters, and hence all the good background session players. But as far as backup singers, they used a little group on the label, a few girls who were from Jersey City as well, who had a couple records out on Carnival, one in 1966, and then in 67, they actually released a couple things that went nowhere. But they were tasty little records, and maybe you heard them. I Need a Guy was one of them. Was a great little record, a woulda, coulda, shoulda, and the girls that went to high school with the guys, and so they all knew each other, and Joe, the label owner, just absolutely loved them. The flip side of that was also nice. Can hear that Manhattan's feel to that too, and just they were just a great compliment to each other. But clearly, the Manhattans were about to become Carnival's biggest act, and they had great artists, and we played some like Phil Terrell or Lee Williams and the Persuasions, and on the list went. But the Manhattans, and it was that third single. Man, and actually, you can in some ways thank Murray the K for that, because he played a big role in that. The other thing was what started with the big hit, and we'll be playing some of that, of course, was a new pressing plant. Joe had made a deal with Columbia, and so Columbia took over pressing his records as part of Columbia Products. So these records sounded good, and of course, I Wanna Be. And that was the title, became the absolute first hit. Got to number 12 on the R&B charts. Not much on the pop charts, 68. But still, it was more than anything the breakout record. A great song, and they just wail at the end, and it's just wonderful. I used to love to sing along with that. Shocked patrons at gas stations in South Dakota, I'll tell you that. Yeah, just a great, great song. And interestingly, that Joe, the label owner, decided that Blue wrote it. Blue should be the singer. And normally Smitty was the lead singer, but Joe Evans said, "Hey, Blue, I know you usually sing bass, but you wrote it. Sing your own song." And so he did, a lot higher than his natural register. And Blue said, "The night we knew that I Wanna Be was going to be on a national radio show from New York City, we notified everybody we knew, our friends, our relatives, make sure they would listen, because this was the experience of hearing yourself on the radio." And it was actually one of Murray the K's contests, you know, the Battle of the Bands things. And of course, they won. And of course, they would win, because I think Blue practically called the entire phone book. And the B-side was a Sonny Bivens light dancer, "What It Gonna Be," which was also neat as well. So 888-876-5593. We're going to get to Lee in Baltimore, if he's willing to hang on for a few minutes, because we got the news coming up in a minute. I want to talk to Lee about the Manhattans, and we'll play a lot more. Yeah, because that was a start, but then what comes after that? "Searching for My Baby," which, number 20 on the R&B charts, and which was nice, bubbled under on the pop charts, and then we get into "I'm the One Love Forget" and "Follow Your Heart," and those didn't chart, but man, they should have. So all that and more coming up next hour right here on WGN Radio.
Take my girl away from me, mister. Oh, no, 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 no. You can't steal my guy away from me, sister. Cause we're so in love. So in love. Are we? You can't break the spell of love, hey mister. Oh no, 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 no. Your looks won't get my guy away from me, sister. Cause we're so in love. So in love. Are we?
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and yeah, that's Barbara Brown on Carnival, and that's Smitty singing with her of the Manhattans, and it was Sonny Bivens who wrote it. So, yeah, that's sort of Manhattans all the way with Barbara fronting it, and appropriately so. We'll get back to the Manhattan story in moments, or maybe we'll be continuing it right now as Lee from Baltimore joins us. So, Lee, welcome to WGN Radio. Are you there, Lee? Oh, no, we lost Lee? Oh, Lee, please call me back. I don't know. I don't know what happened to Lee, but he's dropped off the radar. I think that happened on Trivia the other night, too. So call us back, Lee, because I'd love to talk to you. He's from Baltimore and wants to talk Manhattans, and hey, happy to do that. Yeah, so I Wanna Be was really the breakout record and the game changer in so many ways. For one thing, singing had really been part-time for the members of the group. They had to make livings in other ways, because until I Wanna Be, nothing was really bringing in any money. And in fact, Blue worked for Muscular Dystrophy. Yeah, you know, the telethon. And he was writing I Wanna Be while he was at work at the Muscular Dystrophy telethon place. But it was Kenny who was actually the only one of the group who was a college graduate. He had gone back to school. He got a degree in biology. And Wally Kelly, Kenny Wally Kelly. And he really had a decision, because, of course, in his case, he was he had a serious job and working in the hospitals and the labs and, like I say, biology degree and all that kind of stuff. And it was a serious choice. And all the guys made it. They quit their day jobs immediately because they couldn't maintain them and do the group activities. And after I Wanna Be, every last one of them did. And so then the So In Love came out, the Barbara Brown record, and the Persuasions did some neat stuff too. In fact, they covered some of the Manhattan stuff. "Searching for My Baby" was the fourth single, And you know, I thought it was I thought it was a great record. It only got to number 20. Well, not bad really when you think about it, on the R&B charts. But yeah, I thought it sounded pretty darn good. And I'll let you be the judge of that as well. I hope Lee will call back. I was looking forward to that. All right. So in the meantime, yeah, Sonny wrote "Follow Your Heart," and we played that a few times. But if you missed it. That's a woulda, coulda, shoulda. Did not chart, but should have. And I played that out of order, actually. We're talking about, and Sonny wrote it, of course, Smitty Lee. But before that, right after I Want to Be, they came up with Searching for My Baby, which got to number 20 on the R&B charts, but barely bubbled under the pop charts. Of course, Blue wrote it. And the flip side was I'm the One Love Forgot, which Sonny wrote. And both of them, I thought were good little records. And I'm not sure that I would have put on the one Love Who Forgot on the flip side. I think that might have been the single before Follow Your Heart. But who knows? I'll let you decide on that as well. But the A side, like I say, got to number 20 on the R&B charts.
Has anybody seen
my baby since she ran away?
I've been so lonesome,
each and every day.
I'm tired of searching
east and west and all over town.
Somebody please
tell me where my baby can be found.
So that was the follow-up to I Want to Be, and I thought it was a pretty good one. Like I said, 20 on the R&B charts and barely bubbled under on the pop charts, but it was the flip side that was interesting because it really was the first time the group did an all-out ballad with I'm the One Love Forgot, the Sonny wrote. Might have been a flip side, and it might not have charted, but it was a very interesting record for the group. It's Sonny's all-time favorite. He wrote it for Amy, his future wife, that he ended up marrying, and the mother of his five children. And the interesting thing about that was other people liked it as well, and one of them was an a guy named Otis Redding. And in fact, he liked it enough that immediately he booked the Manhattans to join him on his college tours in southern states in 1965, and loved Smitty. And in fact, he wanted to manage the, he was talking to them right before that plane crash in December of 67 about actually managing them. He thought they were just terrific. Every year he'd, 65, 66, 60, you know, at the beginning of 67, he would put them and the Barqués on the tours. He just thought they were great. And it was the record that did it for him was that ballad, which of course later they would be known for their ballads. But at that time it was a departure. Follow Your Heart, which we played, was the release after that, which was another one that Sonny wrote for Amy. And in some ways he Smitty was thinking about Billy Stewart when he did that. And you know, but now we're getting into a period on Manhattan, and we're still, you know, 1965, and we're getting into 66. But now the hits are not coming. These things are not charting all the way around. And you got some interesting records as far as that goes, and enough that now Carnival Joe at Carnival is saying, we need an album. And so, in fact, they took 8 songs and put together an album, and it was just terrific. And after that, Christmas time, 1966, Alone on New Year's Eve, and the Lovettes are doing backing on that. It didn't even chart as a Christmas song, which is a sad thing, but it was Smitty's favorite of all the songs, and his girlfriend at the time of his death said he had a kind of rough life in relationships, so he kind of related to that. Yeah, I'll say that Smitty had a rough life in relationships. What occurred after I Wanna Be got on the charts and now they're touring and stuff like that is he had gotten a divorce and his ex-wife sued him for a ton of alimony, thinking that there was money there. And of course, at this point, there's no money there. And in fact, when Smitty died in 1970, there was still no money. It wasn't until the mid-70s when they were on Columbia that it really broke. But what happened next, of course, was a decision, because now we've gotten into 68, which is nothing's going on as far as that goes. And I betcha probably 66 that Blue co-wrote one of the last things. And we'll pick it up there. The Almost to Atlantic story, as we talk about the Manhattans. That's right. I don't know why I was in Marvelettes. I guess I'm looking at something else at the same time. But Manhattans, more Manhattans, more often, and obviously your calls will be needed right here on WGN Radio.
Hey, couldn't love me. Hey, 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 couldn't love me. Hey, couldn't love me. Hey, 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 couldn't love me. Ooh, day by day I miss you, little darling. Ooh, but I'm afraid to let you know. Bet if you let me hold you, baby, I'd never, never let you go. Bet you can't love me, baby.
Bet you couldn't love me.
I bet you couldn't love me, baby.
Bet you couldn't love me.
As I sit you, little darling, crying because you make me feel so sad. If you called me, baby, I wouldn't hardly.
WGN Radio, I'm Riley James. Manhattans, I Betcha. 1966 got to number 23 on the R&B charts, bubbled under on the pop charts, and actually played that a little out of order. That came right before All Alone on New Year's Eve, which, like I mentioned, Smitty just really loved, considered it his fave. But that ended 66. And as we get into 67, the most interesting thing probably in 67, and we played it last night, I Call It Love, in 1967, got to number 24. And that was the last Carnival charter. But it absolutely was not the last Carnival record by any means. Now, what happened again? Here comes 68. There's not a lot of material. And here come the albums that they did. 2 of them, For You and Yours was one of them. And it was interesting. It was the first time they got an industry award in 68 for most promising group from NARA. And if you'll remember, NARA was originally NATRA, the National Association of TV and Recording Artists. It was primarily black radio personnel. personalities, and it was quite the organization in its day, really. I remember 66, the Royalettes performed at their convention in Houston. It was great. In any event, that was the first award from NARA, and you never really forgot that. In fact, Kenny and Blue were saying, it's like we won a Grammy. It was like the biggest thing for us. And, you know, after the album, Carnival released a couple of singles in 1969, and actually they were meant for a third album, which never materialized, but the last single was Call Somebody Please, which we played last night, that Blue wrote, and just a great, great record, and did not chart. But we're starting to see the seeds of distress, shall we say. The problem is that they all like Joe Evans, who owned Carnival, a lot. Even though he had the habit of, he'd put his name on some of the songs, not many, by the way, but on some of them and all that. But that was pretty standard in the royalty world back then. But the problem with Joe is he didn't have the money or the contacts. So what you had with the Manhattans, as long as they wanted to tour from Baltimore to Pittsburgh, they were going to be golden. But if they wanted to go to the Midwest or the West Coast, this was really outside of Joe's domain. And he just wasn't financially in a place where he could do it. And every one of the guys was interviewed, and they all had wonderful things to say about Joe, wonderful things to say about Carnival, but all of them said, you know, it was just time. And it was sad because Joe gave them their big break, and they were the most successful group that Carnival ever had, and the boys looked at him like he was a father figure, and they respected him, and of course Joe was hurt and disappointed when he was outvoted, because the bottom line in a business decision is that they had to do it, and Joe ultimately recognized that he didn't have the distribution, he didn't have really anything. And in spite of their existing contract, because Joe had, been under negotiations to sell that contract, first to United Artists, and then he looked at Cap and Jubilee, and then he came to an agreement with Atlantic. And he was going to put them on Atlantic. And, you know, obviously that would have been money for him, and it would have been a good place for the group. But the group outvoted that. And what had happened, the reason that happened, is the Manhattans realized they needed somebody to guide them. And they went to Bobby Schiffman, who was a manager at the Apollo. And his father was actually, Frank Schiffman founded the Apollo in the 20s. And so Bobby knew that the guys were looking for a manager, and he hooked him up with Jack Pearl. Now, if that name sounds familiar, that's because he was Sid Nathan's attorney. So Jack, in fact, Sid Nathan had died in March of 68 at the Miami Art Institute. And that's when Jack Pearl really became the de facto head of King and all the other associated labels, because he was the attorney. And he was the one who negotiated the deal to sell King to Starday in Nashville. Now, let's move on to Deluxe for a moment. Deluxe actually launched in New Jersey, in Linden, in 1944. But in 1951, Sid Nathan bought Deluxe and put it under his Cincinnati banner as a subsidiary to King. And so you can see what's coming here. Jack Pearl was the one who said, no, don't sign that Atlantic contract, which might have been something they should have done. But bottom line is Jack had his own interests, and he wound up putting him on Deluxe. Deluxe needed help. They had a number of people in the past, but absolutely no one who was a seller by this point. And of course, Joe was just crushed. And he had 8 scheduled songs that he was going to release. He only wound up releasing 3 singles and in 69, and no more album. He was not gonna do it. Now, meanwhile, as I say, Joe had Lee Williams and the Cymbals, and he had the Topics, and of course there were some good things going on at Carnival that is outside, and Phil Terrell that we played last night, that is outside the scope of this this story. But we'll get to the Manhattans on Deluxe. The first single was released in May of 69. The picture became quite clear. And George Kerr was the producer on that stuff. Yes, there's a name you know. And they had a number of really good players on the back of the backside of that record in terms of the backup group. So a number of things, but still, it really wasn't going to be the success that anybody had hoped. So the picture became quite clear. Yeah, the picture was clear. All right, this wasn't doing well. Well, fortunately, the next one did well. Now, when I say did well, we're still not talking about the kind of success that that the group had on Columbia by any means, but it's back on the charts, and it is sort of an apocryphal title. It's Going to Take a Lot to Bring Me Back. Well, it did bring them back. And the flip side was an interesting record. I think we played It's Going to Take a Lot to Bring Me Back last night, so we'll talk about the flip side coming up. And your calls are welcome. We got another half hour to talk about the Manhattans or anything else right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. So that's the flip side of the Manhattans' first chart single on Deluxe, second single. The picture became quite clear, didn't chart, but It's Going to Take a Lot to Bring Me Back. Got to number 36. Give Him Up on the flip, and that was Ray DeRouge and Billy Terrell who wrote that, and the Whatnots did it as well. It was just a great little record, and it also was part of the movement to a lot of Philadelphia influence on the Manhattans. And George Kerr, who I mentioned, who produced the picture, became clear, and others certainly had a number of Philadelphia connections, and that's where that really came into play with some of the background musicians, but also writers such as Billy Terrell and Ray DeRouge, and it was just great. So It's Going to Take a Lot to Bring Me Back, which was the A side of that, and like I say, the first charter for the Manhattans on Deluxe. And Sonny was talking about that, and he said, actually, it was co-written by a friend of mine, Richard Poindexter, who also wrote Hypnotized for Linda Jones. Just a great record. And, of course, George Kerr produced that as well. And he also wrote Thin Line Between Love and Hate for the Persuaders. And so, and, of course, went on to be lead vocalist for the Persuaders later. So, George Kerr got in the act all the way around on this stuff. And next thing you know, Deluxe releases an album with these hands. That was 1970. And I think Buddy Scott produced that album, but there were a number of things on it that were different for them, such as remakes of things like "Can't Take My Eyes Off You" and "By the Time I Get to Phoenix." And I think that Sonny said, "The sound's closer to the Four Freshmen or the High Lows than what people would expect from the Manhattans," and that was Buddy Scott's idea, and so it was that what followed was From Atlanta to Goodbye, If My Heart Could Speak was in there too, and they were mid-charters of sorts on the R&B charts, but again, barely bubbled under on the pop charts. And but the group is touring, that's for sure, and that's what they wanted. But while they were doing that, they're on the road and they're starting to think that Smitty's got a problem. And at first, they thought, you know, he's hitting the booze or something. He's doing drugs. And there's all sorts of things that they're saying. He's just not right. Well, the reality was he was not right. He had a brain tumor. And he got to the point of being delirious before anyone really put this together, that this was a medical emergency. You know, the group was thinking he's just drinking on the sly. But they searched his house and his cars, and there's no bottles or anything. And, you know, then he has an accident. He falls down. And, you know, they got all sorts of diagnoses. They went to different hospitals. And then in one, they finally said, well, it was a brain hemorrhage because you looked at his right eye and you could see the brain bleeding behind it. And you know, he was supposed to have surgery that morning. Well, that morning was December 16th of 1970. He was 30 years old, 2 days away from his 31st birthday, and he died. And a subdural hematoma was on the autopsy report. But the reality is he had, and they did not know, a brain tumor. And this was just horrible. And, you know, Joe Evans was there in a minute at the hospital. And of course, Phil Terrell and Sonny and Blue, everybody, to say the least. But now we're getting into an issue of, okay, Smitty is our lead. Who do we get? And like I was talking last night, first they were thinking, well, Lee Williams maybe. But Lee was not going to leave the Cymbals, although he should have, since the Cymbals basically left themselves. But ultimately, they did get Gerald Alston. And that was luck for them. Yeah, he was from Henderson, North Carolina, same city Benny King was born. And it was a perfect match because Gerald had experience. He'd a group called, he had the New Imperials in high school, and then he was the Gospel Jubilees on Sundays and things like that, but not the kind of experience that would preclude him saying, yeah, I'll take a go at the Manhattans. And again, if you look at the Manhattans now, you know what happened to Mon Colombi and how huge they were, but we're really not talking about a group that has had a lot of success at this point. What they were doing is tours of historically black colleges and universities, and that was great, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't the kind of thing where you're saying this is big money or anything of that nature. So, in fact, the first single on with Gerald on lead was I Can't Stand For You to Leave Me on Deluxe in 1971. And what's interesting about that is not only George Kerr is involved, but Bert Keys, who, you know, if you listen to the show, the opener every night is Bert Keys. Yeah, do-do-do-ah-ah. But he was a musician in the 40s and a jazz musician and a pianist. And but he also had done a lot of work on Savoy and Rama and Coed and labels of that nature. So, you know, and later, of course, he wrote a lot of things like Love on a Two-Way Street for the Moments. So originally, that was Leslie Valentine, by the way, and later went on to music scores and all that kind of stuff. So this was absolutely good company to be in. Well, to add to that mix, then they suddenly got involved with Teddy Randazzo. And, of course, you know, Teddy did, man, a number of wonderful things and also a lot of writing for the Manhattans in the 70s. So you started to have some good singles on Deluxe. But again, I think Backup was the biggest hit. It got to number 19. Mostly these were, you know, records in the 30s or 40s. I shouldn't say that because One Life to Live, which did not chart pop at all, was actually quite a big R&B record. I'll see if I can find that, because if I can, we'll play that. But I'm not sure. I don't think it's on this computer. But in any event, yeah, Teddy Randazzo was originally in the Three Chuckles, but he did so much more, and of course was involved in the Alan Freed rock and roll movies, and then later the Royalettes, which, you know, I mentioned them before. I just thought that was a Baltimore group, that It's Gonna Take a Miracle, which was Tony Randazzo and Bobby Weinstein, just the absolute best. And he did a lot of stuff for Little Anthony and the Imperials, some of their best work ever, and all that. And so yeah, One Life to Live got to number 3, and Blue wrote it. And it was interesting because it was sort of approaching what would later be the writing format that would appear on the Columbia Smashes. And you've got, like I say, not only Blue writing it, but you've got what you'd expect with the soliloquies and then all the other stuff. And it was the first top 10 record on the R&B side. So if it's not on this computer, I got to find it. As far as that goes, all the way around. And Blue wrote a lot of nice things for that. Deluxe had a second album. And, you know, it was interesting because we're getting yet to another point in time. And, of course, Deluxe is reaching a problem, too, because, as we were saying, that came from the estate of Sid Nathan. So, you know, Starday had bought King, and that meant Starday, suddenly a country outfit out of Nashville, owns Deluxe. Well, that gets sold to Lynn Broadcasting. Yeah, Louisville, Indianapolis, Nashville, except they didn't have a station in one of the markets. But in any way, it was based in Nashville. And then Lynn sold it to Polydor like months later. And I think after that, Freddie Beanstock's company was involved with Lieber and Stoller, wound up getting it. But the bottom line is Starday King wind up losing their main artist on King, James Brown. And from there, it was a domino effect. And what the Manhattans realized at this point in time is, gotta move on, to quote Billy Grammer there. And so it was, as they're looking around, that they sign a deal with Columbia. And of course, this is where the fate of the Manhattans changes in ways that are too numerous to even outline, but suddenly you've got them working with Gamble and Huff and Bobby Martin, and you've got Tom Bell, who of course was busy doing things with the stylistics and all that, but Bobby Martin was probably the big force there. But we're not going to get into the Columbia material, A, because we'll run out of time, but B, because you know, to me, when I say the Manhattans, they're on Carnival. Yeah, that's with a few exceptions on Deluxe as well. But Columbia, well, the money rushed in and everybody knew them, and isn't that great? But to me, yeah, it's Carnival all the way. So if you've got other comments about them, I'll find something to play. I'll look for One Life to Live. I may find that. And the fact that it's not on this computer tells me that it wasn't one of my favorites, but it was certainly the biggest thing they ever did on Deluxe. So, but I don't know. I might go with If My Heart Could Speak. If you've got, that got to number 38, and that was kind of a nice record. But if you have Manhattan requests, we'll take them on WGN Radio.
Excuse me. Could I have this last dance with you? You know, this is my favorite song. I've been waiting all night just to get a chance to rap to you. There's so many things I want to say, and for so long I've been wanting to say them. How come you cry? That's your man she's with. You never thought it could happen to you, huh? Oh yeah, I know what you mean. After all, she is your best friend. I wonder how long they've been seeing each other. I wonder if it's been as long as I've been digging on you. You know, I've been watching you for a long, long time. You know, I was sort of hoping we could hook up one time. If I could put all my wishes together, it couldn't describe the way I feel about you. If I can't hear a sound, oh baby, I'll hear you. Yes, I will.
If I can't see a doggone thing.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. I can't believe I said I don't know if I got this record. I only have it. I play it on KJ. All right, number three on the R&B charts, bubbled under on the pop charts. And the pop version, they released it twice, doesn't have Gerald Alston's soliloquy at the beginning of it. It just starts at the music part. But, of course, the R&B part included that soliloquy. And it was interesting because that was recorded in Macon, in the same studio that James Brown did a lot of his recordings. And it was terrific. It was the first top 10 record on the R&B side they ever had, and it got to number three. And Hal Neely and Bob Riley and Bobby Smith did that. And Bob Riley was a promotion guy, actually. And Bobby Smith owned the studio in Macon. And A Million and One was New York, and One Life to Live was Macon. And it was just great. I think they did some cleanup work in Nashville, and Blue was talking about that. He said, yeah, we did some stuff in Nashville, but not Memphis. And Neely, Riley, and Smith were the in-house producers in Macon. And Blue did the arrangements, he said, but I don't think we ever got any credit for that. And that was the deal. And Hal Neely had been a vice president at King, and I think he was struggling at Starday at the time. So it was a great record. I can't believe I'm saying, I don't know. Yeah, I'm just, you know, too old to exist anymore is what's happened. So 888-876-5593. We'll get to Nick in Baltimore. What's up, Nick? Talk to me.
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
All right. Well, other than my mind left me, that's all. Other than that, I'm fine.
Mine left me a long time ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Boy, that's great stuff you're playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't called in a while. I've been listening. I really appreciate the show. So I had a question about KRVN and
Lexington, Nebraska.
Lincoln, Nebraska.
Lexington, Nebraska.
So Lexington.
Yes. The big. It was originally the Big 1010 and 880 now.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. When did they move? Because I always thought they were at 880.
Well, no. I think that 72. And what happened was, this, by the way, is owned by farmers. You know, we talk about clear channels being really just so important to people in the white space and the farmers and all that. Well, this was owned by a cooperative of farmers and ranchers. And in 1951, they put on KRVN, and it was on 1010, and it had 10,000 watts. But in 1972, they moved it to 880 because they got the 50,000 watts. And that was, they put on an FM in 62, KRVN FM. I think it's 93.1. But of course, that 50,000 watt signal. It's one of only two 50,000 watters in Nebraska. The other, of course, KFAB in Omaha, thanks to WBT. And so, but remember, KRVN is not the 1A clear on 880. Of course, they probably don't even have those things anymore, but WCBS AM in New York is the 1A clear. So everything you're talking about had to protect that. And so from 51 to 72, they were on 1010, and then they moved to 880. But you can see their patterns. If you ever go to, radio-locator.com? Yeah, and that's, I think that's the MIT database. And if you go there, you can look at the patterns. So let me just pull that 880, look at their beautiful maps right now. We'll look at nighttime coverage. Oh, isn't it pretty? And, as you'd expect, it's pulling away from the east. It goes very well to the south and good to the west and a bit to the north, but it doesn't do as well going east for the obvious reason. But still, man, you can just, in the Midwest, yeah, everybody knows KRVN.
So, like, where you are, do you get it? Or?
No.
You don't get it?
No. We don't at all. You know, one of the problems is that when you cross the Rockies, you got a whole different world going there. And so we're not going to pick that up.
Oh, okay. I just assumed it points west.
Well, as I say, it does to a good extent, but no. Now, I will admit, I've never tried hard, but we do get, I'll tell you what we get some nights like a local, is we do get KOA in Denver. So that, of course, that's non-directional, but at night. They're running four towers on that array. But now that you've mentioned it, I will pick myself up and get John to drive me around, and we will try and see if we can get 880. But I when I've been scanning, and I do scan because there's so little to listen to as far as that goes,
right.
I haven't run across it.
Oh, okay.
You know, I get that 770, of course, from Albuquerque, like a local. You know, the old KOB.
Oh yeah, you would get that.
Oh yeah.
One night when I call you, you'll have to explain those synchronous transmitters to me.
All right. We can do that.
I think 770 had that in Albuquerque.
Right. Right. Yeah, we can.
I never understood that, but you're running out of time.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So we can talk about that, and absolutely.
Okay.
I think 770 did. You're right. I don't think they do now, but I'm not sure. I don't know what they do now. Hell, I don't even know. I don't even know who owns them anymore. Shows you where
Cumulus.
I'm. Oh, really? Well, that's why I don't know. See, I was happy when it was Hubbard. You know.
Yeah.
But every day I realize that it has all passed me by, and it's just as well.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great show. Thanks a lot.
Oh, well, thank
Happy
you.
New Year.
And you too. Yes, hopefully 2023 is the one we've all been waiting for.
I think it'll be a great one.
I sure hope so. If it just exceeds most people's expectations, it'll be great ones. You know, because so many people are looking at this. And, of course, there's no shortage of all the prognosticators who are like, oh, the market will fall apart in 3 weeks, you know.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it's going to turn around. I really do.
Well, I'm counting on it. Thanks. Appreciate it, Nick.
Have a great night. Right. Thanks.
You too. Yeah, and it is fun. I've mentioned before that, I go to sleep at night. I look for things on YouTube, and I look for things that are interesting enough that I'm not completely bored into. Then I'm, going back into my own thoughts and keeping myself awake, but also not so interesting that I'm spellbound and I won't go to sleep. So it's that middle ground that I'm looking for. That's why, like a lot of the near-death experiences or the people who've been with aliens or whatever, they're fine. And yeah, and some better than others. But of course, you come to the end of the year and there is no shortage of predictions. And I don't care what you want to predict. There's somebody on YouTube who's predicting it now. And we talk a lot about it with, like, real estate, the people who say, oh, man, it's going up in 2023, and other people who, oh, it's completely crashing. It's going to make 2008 look like a playtime. And everything in the middle, and the same thing with the stock market. But in terms of the political prognosticators, something dawned on me last night about 4 in the morning as I was scanning some of them, because I probably heard, since the first of the year, maybe 30 or 40 of these YouTube things of, the grand poobahs of the world. And what I realized last night is every one of them is coming from a liberal slant. So what they're predicting, of course, is, their own political bias gets into this is almost laughable. And, so I'm now I'm on a quest. I want to find somebody whose bias is, say, to the right. And what are they predicting? But I haven't found that person yet. So if you know, well, by all means, weigh in. Now, until that, tomorrow night after the game, we will reconvene probably around, I'd say, 11 Central, but give or take a few minutes. We thank Dan for keeping us on the air tonight. We thank John for screening your calls. Most of all, thanks you for calling, the few of you who did, other than Lee, who hung up. And we'll do it again tomorrow night. I hope you'll join me. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.